We do have a quorum. The Government Operations and Elections Committee will come to order. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. After studying the minutes, I'd like to move for approval.
Representative Quam moves for approval of the minutes of Thursday, February 16th. Any discussion? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Minutes are approved. Since Representative Beard is on our committee, I am going to move House File 1813, Representative Benson's bill, first. Running Representative Benson, I will move that House File 1813 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on State Government Finance. And I see you have a delete everything amendment as well.
I do, Madam Chairman. The DE1 amendment.
Okay, I will move the DE1 amendment. Since it is a delete everything amendment, if it is all right with everyone, I'd like to pass that first so that the author can be working from the text which he wants. Is that okay? All those in favor of the DE1 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Now the bill is in the shape that you want. Please proceed with your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm going to start with that there'll be some work on the bill after this committee. My intention is for this bill to become far more permissive rather than the shall or must that's in it currently. My intention is for the content of the bill to be added to what is already part of a master contract that was part and parcel to the work that was done in the legislature and also part of what the governor did when he issued his executive order in April of 2011. The last legislative session, a number of bills were introduced to give tools to state government to become more efficient and more responsive. We had bills that were heard in this committee and the committee that I sat on in state government finance that addressed analytics for finding effectiveness in fleet management, tax revenues being paid, and so on. And then, referencing that the governor is very interested and keen on finding new efficiencies, and in his executive order to establish a master contract to provide resources to agencies in 12 different areas, state building efficiency, fleet management, tax collection, again, human services, unemployment compensation, workers' compensation, strategic sourcing, customer-focused data analytics, continuous organization and quality improvement, strategic planning and data quality analysis, support services, and additional subject matter services. However, there is nothing in this in either the bills that were introduced last year or in the governor's plan or his executive order that took a look at establishing resources to provide agencies, and I've included the Minsky system, with a list of vendors who would take a hard look at how the management structure, the administrative or the overhead structure is organized. Over the last 30 or 40 years around the globe, companies, corporations have been addressing how they would begin to address the overhead costs to their administrative structure, how they would take a look at becoming more flexible and in tune to their customers by flattening out the organization and pushing responsibility to the lowest possible level, empowering their employees. In business speak, we the terminology in a lot of cases is spans and ladders. How hierarchical is the management structure? How many layers of management does a decision have to get through before something can get done? How closely to the customer can the decision be made? And these are things that have led to great innovations and great improvements in quality service and customer satisfaction in many areas. My intent of this bill is to place before the agency the resources necessary for them to provide, to have a study to do this very same thing. Now, I know there's a number of people that were going to testify today. Most of them, I think, or I can assume, are more upset over the shall conduct the study Hopefully, you know, when they come up, that will be mitigated. I can assure them that I've already talked to Mr. Shepherd about crafting the new verbiage before it gets to committee. But for them to understand that this is what we're after, this is what I'm after in the bill. And you know, as we press forward, I've talked to a number of people, and I know that this is Governor Dayton's intent too. Is we want to make a government that is effective, efficient, it's responsive. You know, he's already initiated a number of things. This is the administrative overhead. Where did I get the idea for this? Well, certainly, spending 30-some years in a government agency myself, I went through a number of reorganizations that tried to address these things. In fact, I'm here before you today because although they might have a failed business plan and they're in dire need of some significant changes in the Postal Service, I'm here because the Postal Service realized that with the reduction in number of employees, they didn't need as many administrative districts. And through a reorganization effort, they eliminated the district that I'm in, and through a reduction in force, I'm no longer employed there. Now, I'm not assuming that what we're trying to do here is to lay people off. In fact, we're going to have expert testimony about what this is intended to do. But when we look at becoming more efficient, we can't leave out of the equation the top side of an organization or the administrative overhead. I know in many of the bills that were heard last year, there was a lot of testimony about, well, we're always attacking or reducing or eliminating the people that are closest to where the work's being done. Well, this is the other side of that. What are we doing about the people at the very top and the middle management? And we're also looking at span of control. How many supervisors does an organization need for the given number of employees? And I know in many organizations there is a set number. It typically varies by how difficult or complex the work that's being done on the number of or the number of employees that a supervisor has. But a study that would address that, looking at the benchmarks, looking at the bill, reorganization of state agencies along service rather than functional lines in order to provide more efficient service. I've already begun to see this with a new permitting process that would allow for a contractor, a business, to go to one place and as a portal to get all the permits they need. Reorganization of state agencies in order to flatten out their organizational structure by requiring that decisions are made closer to the service needed. You know, my hope is that when you go into vehicle services, that the person there closest to the job can be empowered to make decisions rather than having to go in the back room and ask a supervisor and they have to say, well, wait a minute, I have to cut a call St. Paul or someplace else. Eliminating redundancies and optimizing the span of control ratios. These are the things that I'm trying to get accomplished. Now, under the master contract, we had a report in January when we first got back that gave us some insight to where they're at. The master contracts have been let. There's a number of companies or corporations that do this work that now have been identified in each category. I have with me today a member of IBM, David Post, and who does some of this work. IBM happened to be one of the firms that was awarded in the RFP. And he's going to go through a short presentation to give you an idea of the kind of work that I'm talking about, that whoever gets the nod, so to speak, to provide these services would do for a particular state agency.
Representative Benson, I did have a question, if you could just hold off for a minute. Representative Nelson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess we'll listen to what the gentleman from IBM has to say, but I guess the question I have, when I'm looking at this and listening to what Representative Benson is saying, this sounds a lot like what you and I do on the Sunset Commission, and we're seeing a study to do what the Sunset Commission is supposed to be doing, mm-hmm. With no staff and no budget to do anything to do it, but they've done a real good job this last year. So I guess I'm concerned of this. Is this just another study to study what we're already doing? We're already looking at. That's one of the things the Sunset Commission did and took in their task is modeling it after what has been done in Texas and a few other states, is that look at how the setup of our agencies are and the commissions and the things that we oversee are, that that's what we're doing, and try and come up with better ways of doing it and best practices so that they all work more efficient. So we'll listen to the thing, and I guess that's just what I wanted to point out. It sounds a lot like what we're already doing with the Sunset Commission. Are we going to create, and the concern I have is, are we going to create something else to do the same thing we're already doing?
Make a good point. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And somewhat along those lines, Representative Benson, you mentioned Governor Dayton. This is sort of aligned with Governor Dayton's ideas a couple times in your presentation. Have you been in contact with him and his office about this bill, and are they in support of this approach?
Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. No, I have not been in touch. I've talked to a number of the agencies. I've not talked with the governor's office in particular about it. Certainly, this has got a couple more places to go. We'll welcome that opportunity. Thank you for the suggestion, in fact, and I will contact them to find out how they'd like to proceed or see how this bill proceeds.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you. I appreciate that, because I think there is, some bipartisan interest in, looking at, we have the Redesign Commission and the Sunset Commission, Redesign Committee, Sunset Commission. And, so I would hope that these kinds of things could be bipartisan, because I think there are different approaches that we would take, but maybe this is something we could come together on. So I worry that this may be just a more of a partisan kind of thing. And, you had mentioned Governor Dayton, and I would just strongly urge that, getting his perspective or his office's perspective, and it's possible we could move forward bipartisanly, but I think there's enough in this bill that makes me a little concerned. So,
okay, I think then we will move on to Mr. Post. Welcome to the committee, and if you could just identify yourself for the record.
Sure, Madam Chairman and Representative Benson, members of the committee, thanks very much for inviting me here today to discuss this bill and IBM Corporation's point of view on how states should approach organizational consolidation and reorganization efforts. IBM believes that Minnesota has opportunity to use this efficiency initiative as a way to not only save taxpayer dollars, but also improve the quality of services delivered to citizens. I'm a managing consultant in IBM Global Business Services Strategy and Transformation Practice. In the context of this role, I've been very active in helping shape IBM's response to helping state and local governments overcome their current budgetary challenges. Prior to becoming a management consultant, I was at the World Bank, where I worked on issues pertaining to economic development, good governance, and service delivery improvement. As you know, IBM has been a technology and services provider to commercial and government clients for around the world, almost since the founding of our company a century ago. I'm honored to be here to offer IBM's perspective on the issues that are being discussed here today. So thank you very much for having me.
Very good. Anyone have any questions for Mr. Post? Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Post, and you're a managing consultant, and I guess I'm concerned when we just had a bill related to how many dollars the state of Minnesota is actually spending on consultant fees, and it was in the neighborhood of $370 million. So we're way on our way to hiring lots of consultants, and can you tell us what it's going to cost us, the state of Minnesota, for you to do this? And can you tell us, and then to Mr. Benson, where this money comes from for all of this extra consulting? I'm just concerned about the dollars, because we have a deficit projected for next year.
Okay. Thank you for your question. That violation of protocol? Thanks for your question. It's very difficult to determine ex ante what a study like this would potentially cost. I would say that if done right, these types of initiatives can generate substantive value for the state, but it has to be done in a context where the state is who is driving the initiative. It's not the consultants. And if it's done within the context of a strategic framework and it's well thought out, initiatives like this can deliver substantive value in the form of tangible cost savings in a short time frame. Whether that happens is often as dependent on the structures that are put in place by the state and the approach that it takes as it is by what the consultants takes. So I think it's a valid question, and before undertaking an efficiency initiative of this type, there are a lot of things that the state would want to consider to ensure that it's not only getting the best value out of whatever consultant it hires for the initiative, but also that the structures are in place internally to ensure that the value is actually going to be achieved.
Representative Scalzi.
Before Representative Benson answers, that was a long answer. I'm just trying to get a dollar figure. That's a great answer, and you're a good consultant. I can see that. I'm just a little nervous about the state spending a lot of money that we don't have, because we certainly have struggled with the budget deficit, and we've raised most people's property taxes considerably in this last session. And I'm working hard to make sure that we don't have to do that again and maybe give some relief to some of the people that we've taken money from. So I can't get a dollar figure out of you. Maybe Representative Benson can say something. How much are we going to add to this 360-some million that we're already spending? Because I see lots of contracts here, and there's lots of jobs there, and the Sunset Commission is free, from what I understand. They don't have a stipend. So let me know what you're planning for all these contracts and what it's going to cost us and what it's going to do to the deficit.
Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, first of all, this bill will only provide for the resources for the studies to be done. So it's just going to add this particular topic to the master contract and have or direct that the commissioner go out and find people whose expertise are in reorganization, restructuring of organizations, and make them available. Now, there's a number of agencies that are listed here. The number or the amount that the studies will cost will depend on who elects to use the studies and how much they're contracted for. So it's not easy to come up with a specific number. Just like if you were to look at the governor's analytics bill, it would be impossible to know an exact number without knowing just how many agencies we're going to take advantage of having all these particular companies provide the services. So there is not a definitive number that I can put my finger on in order to give you a number to make it sound good. I wouldn't try to do that.
Representative Skelton.
Well, I'm just a little concerned that we're doing a great big thing without having a clue how we're going to pay for it. And I know in my little business that I run, we don't do things like that. We know how we're going to pay for it before we do something. And I just try to bring my business opportunities in the business world that I live in into the legislature to try to be a good business person for the state. And I guess I'm just very concerned. I know there's a lot of money here, and the Sunset Commission is free. And why don't we use the Sunset Commission?
Well, Representative Benson, isn't the idea part of this to see if there are some cost savings? I mean, I don't know that that's a
Madam Chair. Well, you know, to address it, first of all, the Sunset Commission doesn't go to the study of actually reorganizing the structure, administrative overhead of management, looking at Health and Human Services, and looking at what are the reporting relationships between middle management and higher management and first line management, and going to finding out if there's efficiencies and trying to flatten out the structure to make it more responsive. That kind of detail the Sunset Commission doesn't get into for free or otherwise. And if these contracts are let, there's an opportunity could be done a couple of different ways. First of all, the agents can decide to pay for it out of their own budgets. That may require coming back to the legislature to ask for more money in a given year, a biennium. Or they might decide that they want to issue a contract that says basically your payment is going to be taken from the savings that are found. So it doesn't tie the hands of the agency to be in the driver's seat to make this work for them and for the sake of the taxpayer. I'm as interested as you are as driving down taxes, and I don't want to add any additional cost that I don't have to the taxpayer at any level, property taxes, businesses, or whatever. But I am interested in making it the process of managing the state's assets in any agency as efficient as possible, and that does start with the top.
Representative Post, did you want to go through your presentation?
Sure.
Oh, excuse me, Mr. Post.
I'll take the title, although I haven't been elected.
Yeah, there is redistricting today. I wasn't sure.
Exactly. Yes, I'll go through this very briefly, and then I welcome any questions that the committee might have. So I'm going to try to make this brief, and then we can hopefully have a good conversation. So I just want to, in case you're not familiar, tell you a little bit about IBM and kind of how we think about transformative efforts like this. So I'm not sure if everybody knows, but in the early 90s, IBM was basically on the brink of death, and Lou Gerstner came in as the new CEO, and the first thing that he did was he sent he went out into the field and he talked to a lot of IBM's customers, and he said, what do you think about how we're doing business? And a lot of the customers said that IBM really had begun to neglect its customers, and that if they didn't have all these big expensive mainframes, they probably wouldn't do business with IBM. The only positive thing they said is they liked how the guys were dressed. As a result of this input, Gerstner set IBM on a path towards transformation that was really focused on, organizing IBM internally so to be able to better serve the needs of customers, and two, focusing more on what customers actually need. And we think that IBM's story presents some pretty good lessons about how large organizations can undertake transformational efforts. Simplicity was really the key to IBM's transformation. We went from 155 data centers to 12, from 31 separate networks to one, from hundreds of different PC configurations to four. We cut IT spending by over 30%, even with an increase in volume. And the way that we did this is by focusing on transforming operational processes, transforming organizational design and human resource structures, leveraging data, improving efficiency, and transforming culture. And as a result of this approach, we've been very successful in cutting expenses, and at this point, our stock's at an all-time high. And it's really a testament to if you make these internal types of transformations, you have a positive impact not only on your bottom line, but also, by extension, on what your customers are, the service that your customers get. The practice I sit in works with organizations on transformational initiatives. We're organized around five areas. Basically covers a lot of the things that you need to think about in a transformational effort like this. The what of the business organization, so what should the business strategy be? The how of a business, so how are we going to deliver our products and maintain service excellence, mitigate risk? And the organizational aspect, so who's going to do this and how do we develop a high-performing culture? We feel very well positioned to speak on this issue. We've led clients through over 1,000 mergers and acquisitions engagements, and we've learned a lot of lessons that we think are highly applicable to the types of challenges that Minnesota could potentially face if it decides to undertake an initiative like this. So I'd just like to walk you through a brief point of view about our thinking about these types of transformational initiatives and things that would need to be taken into consideration. So in our point of view, a merger process typically encompasses five main steps spanning from strategy development to successful execution. And what the stage that it appears that the state is currently in right now, or that this bill is referring to, are the first two steps, which are developing the strategy and then trying to quantify the business case and understand what the benefits might be or what the 2B organizational structures might be. So I'm going to focus my presentation predominantly on these first two steps, although I will allude briefly to the subsequent three. So the first and second step really involve determining what agency should be consolidated or reorganized and establishing the business case. This is really critical to the point raised by the representative for ensuring that any type of transformational initiative is going to achieve its desired objectives. As part of this work, our approach is to identify agencies with overlapping responsibilities. So that could be in either assets and functions, in workforce, or in core missions. To assess the extent to which consolidation and reorganization opportunities are justified, and we would look at things like headcount reduction, operational cost savings potential through either back office consolidation or footprint rationalization in terms of field offices or business process improvements. And we really look at also, could, if these consolidations were to happen or reorganizations could happen, what would be the organization's capacity to maintain and improve upon the expected level of service delivery? Because although these types of initiatives are commonly viewed as an end, they're a means to an end, and that end is improved an improved customer experience and better value for taxpayers. So, and as an initial juncture, I think that Representative Benson's bill kind of gets us to a very good place because it allows us to establish the business case associated with making these organizations and really generate and drive a very productive public policy dialogue about the direction that the initiative should potentially move in. And what's interesting about these types of initiatives in our experience is you can often go through them and get something that's substantively better both from a customer perspective and an efficiency perspective than you had before. That should be the goal. If you look at what Australia has done with their Centrelink program, which is a government agency that helps deliver services, support, and financial assistance to those in need for 10 government departments under one roof, what they've effectively done is consolidated a customer relationship management function. This has made it easier for customers to access services. They don't have to go to 10 different spots. They can do through one portal or through a one-stop shop that's in their locality, and it saved money for the government. So it's been really a win-win situation, and these integrated types of service delivery models are something that the state might want to consider if it were to pursue this type of an initiative. So in terms of Representative Benson alluded to trying to determine what the structure of an organization should be or how it could be reorganized. This is an example of recent work we did with the city of with a big city on the West Coast. We looked at three city departments, and the goal of the engagement was really to improve the productivity of the department by delivering new service delivery models and technologies and recalibrating the service levels and outcomes were actually achieved. So what we did is we benchmarked police spending against peer cities to identify areas of over and under spending relative to crime rate and cost of living. We looked at staffing levels based on demand for services and adjusted for key factors. And then we quantify savings in other areas of operations, including the civilianization of the workforce, reducing the supervisory structure by increasing the span of control, and streamlining report and records management, more efficiently staffing call center, consolidating facilities, and so on and so forth. So the idea was, when we're looking at an organization, we need to look at what service delivery demands the organization's responding to, and structure that organization accordingly. It should not be the other way around, where a department or organization is structured in one way, simply to, and that's the way that citizens access services. Steps 3 through 5 in the merger and acquisition process I outlined before, I'm not going to cover them in substantial detail, but I think that there are some guiding principles that the state could potentially learn from other states' experience in this area. Communicating effectively, so after the decision to undertake an efficiency program is made, to really communicate effectively to stakeholders, generate support. You'd have to move very quickly, so this is kind of the first phases. 1 and 2 really have to do with establishing the business case. Subsequent steps, once you've decided that there is a business case, we recommend that clients move quickly to accomplish the objectives outlined, and manage change proactively. So in the course of these types of reorganizations, there's going to be a lot of things to think about in terms of putting together plans for change in the areas of business process, technology, organizations. You have to establish governance and performance monitoring frameworks. And those are what the things that really allow you to execute well on a consolidation or reorganization effort. This is one effort we recently undertook within IBM. We worked with a large federal agency to consolidate 26 payroll processing centers into 4 government-wide service centers for the federal government. The support was very far-ranging. We helped quantify the business case prior to undergoing the transformation. And the federal government actually is expected to realize over $1 billion of savings in the next 10 years in cost avoidance and cost savings. So, you know, if done correctly, and mergers and reorg efforts aren't often easy, they are challenging, and sometimes they do not achieve their desired objectives, but if done effectively and underpinned by a good business case and a robust business case, our point of view is these types of initiatives can definitely generate substantive value for taxpayers and for stakeholders within a state. So, in closing, I just kind of wanted to highlight maybe 3 or 4 main lessons learned that we have collected over the years we've been doing this type of work. As I said before, these mergers can be challenging. There needs to be a lot of legislative agreement that this is the direction that the state wants to go in. There has to be support at high levels of government. When you emerge in the implementation process itself, there needs to be a strong focus, correct project management procedures. Mergers are obviously very political. And I think that some of the questions earlier kind of highlighted that fact. They're not easy. As such, legislative or executive order are often required to move the process forward, and what Representative Benson has introduced is kind of the first stage in this process. For example, I think that the experience that New York is going through right now is illustrative of type of process that's pretty effective in these types of situations. So in New York, the Executive Reorganization Act authorizes the governor to reorganize one or more state agencies. Where legislative approval is required, the legislator is required to vote on any plan within 30 days of the plan's submission. They've done a pretty robust business case development, identified enterprise-wide opportunities. So the efficiency program in New York, it appears to me, as a citizen there, appears to be moving along quite well. As I mentioned before, the merger process also needs to be treated as a step towards achieving an outcome, as opposed to being viewed as an outcome in and of itself. We need to really ensure that if we're going to thinking about doing something like this, that the end result is better for stakeholders, has a better value for taxpayers, and really makes sense. These things should be guided by practicality. It may not make sense to reorganize some organizations or to consolidate some organizations. So it needs to be guided by both the bottom line impact, and given that we're in the public sector and we're in the business of producing results for citizens, the impact on stakeholders. And also, just to reiterate, the merger process, we believe, represents an opportunity to not only change organizational structures, but also a chance to rethink business models and service delivery models. I talked about CenterLink previously. I also wanted to highlight Service Canada. It's also a very good example. Service Canada was created in 2005 to improve the delivery of government programs and services to Canadians by making access to services faster, easier, and more convenient. It offers a single window access to a wide range of Government of Canada programs and services for citizens through 600 points of service across the country, including call centers and the internet. And I think what this example highlights that there are definitely different models out there that can be used to deliver services in a cost-efficient way and an easier way for citizens, because, as I said, citizens want to access the service. They don't care who they access the service through as long as it's easier for them. So I think that this initiative provides an opportunity to really think through what a new way of delivering services might be within the state of Minnesota. So thank you very much, and I welcome any questions you might have.
Thank you. Representative Murray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd just like to bring to everyone's attention, we have some visitors in the gallery today from the Laura Jeffrey Academy in St. Paul, which is an all-girls middle school. And they're here today determining if they want to be what, legislators or consultants, right? Huh? So welcome.
I think I see a couple lobbyists in the group.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members. And Dr. Post, I thank you for your presentation. But members, in the background of this, you know, IBM's, you know, got a pretty good, you know, niche here with helping reorganize, etc. But my father worked for IBM for three decades, was around during the transition when IBM in its peak made bureaucracy and the size of the state of Minnesota look, you know, streamlined. They went through a lot of pain and a lot of effort in that transition to become a very viable and strong company. And they've leveraged that experience like many entrepreneurs do, personal experience, to help others through the issues. Now, I'm not sure exactly what we'll gain because I don't think we've got the information, but you know, it's proven that, you know, they've got, and other companies have the expertise to look in from the outside and maybe see how things could be better. And I do have questions about the, you know, cost in that. And so I'd like to ask Dr. Post, from the history and other activities that you've touched on, what is the general cost versus savings on these type of endeavors?
Mr. Post?
It's very difficult to assign a dollar value to this. Obviously, without knowing what the exact scope is. We have seen that clients have recognized a lot of value through these types of initiatives, and that there are arrangements in place that can be established whereby a consultant can be paid out of the savings that are generated. It's a little bit more difficult in situations like this because some of these decisions that would need to be made are policy decisions and political decisions, so that complicates it somewhat, but those arrangements have been used in other types of situations. But it's definitely case by case whether that's the method of payments that's used or whether it's a more of a normal method arrangement between a consultant and a client.
Okay, Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Dr. Post, for your presentation. I just wanted to get a sense from you, you know, when we talk about these efficiencies and, consolidation issues, how much of this is code for sort of layoffs and outsourcing and offshoring? How much of that is a part of kind of what you advise these various companies that you're working with?
It really depends. It really depends on the client's objectives. So within the context of the state of Minnesota, it would be dependent, those types of questions would be dependent on the direction that the legislature takes and the stakeholders in the state takes. Although these types of programs can lead to headcount rationalization or job losses, it doesn't necessarily need to happen. I'm sure that there are businesses that the state's in and services that delivers that there would be a need for more people to work on. So it's possible through a process like this to identify efficiencies as a result of the reorganization or the consolidation, yet at the same time assign people to work in areas where there's great area of needs within the state that's ultimately going to generate better services for citizens.
Thank you. And
Representative
one
Hornstein.
Quick follow-up then. And just as an organizational development consultant, I'm interested in sort of your take. I mean, we're talking about in lines 14 and 15, eliminating redundancies, optimizing span of control ratios for public and private sector benchmarks. And so, I think some folks in the private sector are doing a good job, others aren't. We taxpayers have to bail out the auto industry, for example. Taxpayers have to bail out the banking industry. Just on those two, and we could go on and on, what happened in those two? I mean, why did it get so bad in the auto industry that we had to have this full-fledged public sector government bailout? And what happened, just from your, again, organizational consultant perch, in the banking industry, beyond the kind of issues with the mortgage lending, et cetera? I mean, there were... It seemed like, when we're talking about these trillions of dollars, something must have gone horribly wrong with their organizational structure. So on those two, what's your take on what happened?
That's a good question, and I think that is obviously a conversation that could last a lot longer than we have time for in this short conversation.
But your Cliff's Notes version.
The two sectors are somewhat different. What I would say is, industries and businesses have good times and they have bad times. Within the business of government specifically, there are best practices around, and I think that the business of government is significantly different than a lot of commercial entities because there is a public mission. So I think in instances like this, when we are looking at best private sector benchmarks and public sector benchmarks and trying to identify best practices, what we would want to do is really contextualize those and whatever objectives that the state was trying to accomplish through the initiative, and draw on what other states have done well and what other governments have done well internationally to try to put together a service delivery transformation program or organizational transformation program that would really allow the state to accomplish its objectives both in terms of cost and in terms of service delivery.
Representative Benson?
I'd like to. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to answer Representative Hornstein. Actually, in fact, coming up with this bill, when I did, some research, and what I came across, of course, was that General Motors is going through this exact same exercise. They took a look at their margins and their profitabilities, and they looked over their shoulders at how administrative overhead and structure and so on they compared to Toyota and Ford, their closest competitors, and found that they were higher, considerably higher, and they hired the Hackett Group to come in to do the same kind of thing that I'm kind of hoping that some of the agencies will take advantages of if we provide these resources, if they're made available to them.
Thank you. Representative Hornstein.
One quick final just point and not a question, but again, we talked about this. I think this is part of a parade of bills that are similar that we've heard. Representative Simon raised this last week, and I'll just raise it again. I just have concerns that sometimes we have a double standard when it comes to the public sector vis-a-vis the private sector. And, I think that I have concerns about that. I think that what you're saying is a little different than maybe the bill we had last week. But, we've had a lot of problems in terms of how the private sector is managed and how it operates. And, yet we're not applying the same kind of scrutiny. So, I'll wait and hope that this bill, becomes bipartisan and and I can support it. But right now, it feels like we've got this double standard, and I'd never heard headcount rationalization before. So that was I learned something new, and I do appreciate your coming up and your testimony.
Thank you. Representative Simon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Benson, I really like the idea of the bill, because we always have to reflect inward and look inward, stretch ourselves, get out of the comfort zone. I think that's good. But a couple observations I have. First is just the bigness of it all. I mean, this is a really big bill. This isn't, I mean, just a MNSCU bill or just a Department of Human Services bill will be huge. This is a bill saying all of MNSCU, basically most of the executive branch, all kind of the biggies. And so I have a concern about that. I look forward in the State Government Finance Committee. I assume there will be a fiscal note. You've ordered one, or that someone will come up with at least a range, a reasonable range of a price tag, because this really is a really large undertaking. Doesn't make it bad. Doesn't make it a thing we don't want to do, but it's big. I think we should acknowledge that. Secondly, I think we have to, in connection with the bigness, I think we have to be a little bit careful about micromanaging the executive branch. Now, I fully concede, Representative Benson, that some of this is partisan, not in a bad sense, not in the pejorative sense, but it's just a natural reaction. You know, when Governor Pawlenty was governor, there was a more natural inclination for Democrats to push bills telling them how to organize and who to fire and who to hire. And now I'm observing in the last year and a half, there's generally a tendency. It doesn't come from a bad place. It comes from a natural place. For Republicans to tell Governor Dayton, and by the way, the hypocrisy works both ways. The Democrats who were all fired up about telling Governor Pawlenty how to run things are now suddenly saying, you know, leave the executive branch alone. So the hypocrisy is definitely dual-edged, no question about it. But I just think there is a happy medium there where we have every right as legislators, regardless of who's the governor, to tell the governor about cost savings or efficiency and all the rest, but the scope of this bill seems to me to go beyond that. It's sort of telling the executive branch how and whether to do a whole-scale reorganization and study, and so I hope you'll speak to that. And then finally, I'm glad that Dr. Post brought up, I thought he brought up kind of a tension in the public sector between efficiency and cost savings on the one hand and service delivery on the other. That's something that isn't necessarily present in the private sector, although sometimes it is, and you hope it is. But here that's not necessarily the case. We do all sorts of things as a state that aren't efficient. They just aren't efficient because we have other values that we are placing above efficiency sometimes. And for those rural members from Greater Minnesota, watch out when you're talking too much about efficiency. If someone looking at state government solely through the lens of efficiency might conclude that we shouldn't build certain roads, or have certain offices, or have a MnDOT office in a particular area because it isn't efficient. After all, a consultant might conclude, we have a number of counties in Minnesota that have fewer than 10,000 residents. Maybe the state, so might this person conclude, I wouldn't, but maybe a consultant might conclude, let's just not build roads there anymore. So few people drive on them that it just really isn't worth it anymore. Our money is best spent in the metro area where we get bang for the buck, and a lot of people can drive on these roads. I'm not counseling that. I find that abhorrent. I wouldn't do that. I'm just saying I think we have to be careful when we talk solely about efficiency, that we do things for reasons other than efficiency. We build roads, as we should, in counties with a few thousand people because those people have no less value than the people in more densely populated areas. And Representative Benson, I'm not saying that you're counseling that. Of course you're not. I'm just saying there's a happy medium and a balance here to be struck between service delivery on the one hand, which is the value that we normally place on a very high order, and efficiency and cost savings on another. I just think we need to be careful. But I guess that's kind of a lot of comments. Could you comment, though, on the first one, just the bigness, the scope of this, and how we achieve the right balance between telling the executive branch what to do and being completely hands-off? Where on the continuum should we be?
Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, first of all, in terms of telling the executive branch what to do, it really is a matter of giving them this additional tool in their toolkit. As I've stated before, and I know there are folks in here from Veterans Affairs and MNSCU and all would like to speak to I can assure them that we'll get to a permissive language that says basically we are going to provide this as an additional tool in the toolkit that's already been provided by
the master contract, for them to take advantage of a list of companies like IBM that will do this work. Now, again, remember that this, in terms of the scope of the work that will be done, it will be centered on the administrative structure. That needs to be responsive to ultimately the customer at the end. Representative Simon, I'm more than happy to add, as we craft this before it gets to the next committee, to add in there, instead of more effective service, put in more effective and efficient, or efficient and effective. So it's clear that what I'm not trying to do is make the services that are rendered by the state agencies worse for the people who get them. I just want to make sure that we have crafted or created a management structure and environment that does address those things in the best, most efficient way, that we eliminate this hierarchy, we call it ladders, that makes decision-making process so cumbersome that it takes forever to get a decision made, that we push as close as possible to where the decisions need to be made and empower the employee, the craft employee, if you will, the person that's spreading the salt or doing whatever they do at the lowest possible level. So that's my interest in the bill. And I know Dr. Post would like to answer a few of the questions that you raised.
Representative Simon, I think you raised a number of very important points, so thanks for your comments. On the issue of the scope of this bill has been proposed, I think that obviously the fiscal challenges faced in the last biennium and also in this biennium are really big. So I think that thinking big is not necessarily a bad thing if the scope of the exercise is well-defined. I think that if the state is going to undertake an initiative like this, I think that you hit the nail on the head. It has to be a collaborative process with whoever the state's working with. The state is in the business. It's not only in a dollars and cents business. It's also in the business of providing services to citizens. And I agree with you that, you know, efficiency isn't the only measure. But I don't think that making a process more efficient and delivering services or effectively, even in rural areas, are mutually exclusive. If you look what happens in Service Canada or with Centrelink, they're able to deliver same services in a way that's easier for citizens at a lower cost to the taxpayer. For me, that's a win-win-win situation. Also, you know, some of these agencies, you know, one big benefit of an approach like this is you can really focus on what the agency's core businesses should be. So what you want to do in terms of reorganization effort is look at what businesses are core to an agency's mission and which aren't, and try to drive cost savings in areas that aren't core so you have more to put into areas that are. So those are kind of a couple thoughts I have in relation to the points that you brought up.
And
Representative Simon.
And I would just follow up in the spirit of bipartisanship of saying, Representative Benson, I do appreciate your particular perspective. You're a person who was a high-level manager in the public sector, so I understand that you're not coming at this, you know, sort of guns drawn. I do appreciate that you have an understanding of some of the subtleties that we're dealing with here that maybe are different from other sectors of the economy.
Okay, I've got a couple member questions here, and then I'd like to open it up for folks to testify. Representative Murray?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I agree with the testifier and many things that he's saying here. We continue to have this discussion about what's going on in the private sector, and I guess I'd like to address that a little bit. I work in the private sector, and I have a business outside of here, and I think it's a little unfair if we're comparing our oversight and that we need to be watching over government here versus, you know, are we watching over the private sector? Private sector employer who has employees. In the past year, I have hired on my own IT consultants, client relationship management consultants, lawyers to consult on succession planning, to work on employee agreements, compliance consultants, maybe partially because of what's going on in Wall Street and other areas. But I've gone out and hired all these different consultants, and these people come in and help me. And some of it's practice management, some of it's to deliver better services, some of it's to become more efficient and save some dollars, because we have to. In the private sector, we have to continue to do that every day. So we're already doing this, and I think it's our job in government to also be doing this. If we're not looking at the service delivery, and if we're not looking at the cost of providing these services on an ongoing basis, I don't think we're doing our job. So as a private employer, I do this every day in my job, and I have to look at bringing consultants in all the time because I can't wear every hat out there. And I think we have to do the same thing here. So more a comment than anything, but thank you.
Thank you. Representative Scalzi?
Thank you, Ms. Chair, and I agree totally with Representative Murray. I'm wondering now, about a week ago we had another representative came in here with a bill to cut the size of counties, cut the number of counties to congressional districts, and at that time we told that representative to come back because we didn't think it was appropriate for us to be taking that heavy-handed approach, and we asked that representative to come back and work with the Redesign Caucus and sort of work with Representative McFarland, and I've been on her caucus for 2 years, and I think the Redesign Caucus, for those who aren't on it, is more of a bottom-up approach. There's lots of departments and people that are working on that. It's not like a top-down. This, to me, seems top-down, and I'm wondering if we shouldn't use the same analogy and try to work through the Redesign Caucus, who has spent hours and hours and hours and trips and trips and trips to try to come up with solving efficiencies in government. And that's what I look on it as, redesign for efficiencies. It's not just for fun, it's for efficiencies. And Representative McFarland is here, and I don't know if she wants to comment. I'm not trying to put her on the spot, but I'm trying to put some value in the work that she's been doing and how it kind of differs from this. Hers is definitely a bottom-up approach.
Representative McFarland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Scalzi. I will tell you that Matt Bailey, the Assistant Commissioner at the at Department of Admin, is coming to a future meeting, in a couple weeks, March 5th, I believe it is, to tell us about what's happening at the state agency level, because that's why he was brought into the state of Minnesota. So we are going to be having that for people to talk about those things. So just bring that forward.
And just as a follow-up, I think government moves slowly, and I know sometimes we come to these jobs and we want to make changes, we want to see some quick changes, and the approach, Representative McFarland and I are both from local government, and we've spent lots of years redesigning, hers from the school district and me from cities, redesigning how we work better for efficiencies to get a better bang for the taxpayer buck. And I think that I really appreciate what she's done, and it's a true bipartisan effort. I think that we've got to just stand back just a little bit, take a deep breath, and talk to the people that are working on these issues from the basic level up, because they seem those types of solutions seem to last longer.
And I will appreciate that. I will just caution, though, that the Redesign Caucus, while it does good work, isn't an official House committee, and therefore we can't require members to put their vet their bills in the Redesign Caucus. So it is a little bit different. I do appreciate all the work, but you know, at this point, it's still sort of a member discretion whether or not they want to work through the Redesign Commission before moving forward. Representative Scalzi.
Just one last thing. It's free too, so that's what you have to keep in mind. Thanks, Ms. Chair.
Thank you. Okay, if it's all right at this time, I think I'd have Mr. Oman come up. I know he wanted to, no? Someone from Minsky.
Yeah, sure.
Representative Nelson.
I have my hand up for a question. But one thing before Dr. Post leave, I don't believe he identified himself at the beginning of his testimony for the tape and who he is from, so I think he should do that for the tape before he leaves.
He did.
Okay, I didn't hear it, so that's why.
Yes, he did identify himself.
Yes.
Please. Thank you. If you could just identify yourself for the tape.
Certainly, Madam Chair. My name is Laura King, and I'm the Vice Chancellor for Finance for the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. Thank you for giving me an opportunity to speak for just a few moments about this bill, and thank you to the author, who's been very gracious with his time as we've talked about his interest in the bill and its implications for the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. I'm hoping today, as we talk and as the bill progresses, that you'll find your way to exclude Minsky from the proposal, and I'd like to give you a couple of reasons why we think that's a good idea. I was struck listening to the last speaker at how much similarity I heard in the work that he talked about and the work we have going on already in Minsky. The Board of Trustees and the Chancellor have already delivered significant increases in productivity and efficiency. Our enrollment's up 15%. The real cost of educating our students is down 10%. Space utilization is up 20%. Faculty productivity is up 12%. The system office budget has been reduced 24% since 2009. And we rank 37th out of 50 in administrative spending per FYE nationally. And as the chancellor likes to say, that's a list where you like to be close to the bottom. So we think on that recitation alone, there's an argument that we're already well down the road in the work that this bill contemplates. I was also struck in listening to how much similarity there was in the speaker's program, and something that I came across from Bain and Company, which I might allow is perhaps a competitor of your last speaker, but they do similar work. And this report here is titled Achieving Operational Excellence in Higher Education. And it lists 31 strategies for bringing efficiency to operations. Now, it's written from the perspective of a single institution. And, of course, we have 31 institutions, so it's not a perfect fit. But I found that we have 23 of those 31 strategies already in place or actually in our rearview mirror. And that was a powerful powerful observation for me. Many of you have met Brian Yolitz, who is our new Associate Vice Chancellor for Facilities with responsibility for our 26 million square feet. He comes to us after 27 years with the Air Force, retired as a full colonel with experience in logistics and facilities management. You perhaps haven't met Colin Doherty, who's the Associate Vice Chancellor for Finance. Colin comes to us after about 15 years at the Target Corporation, where he spent his time building data centers and customer service centers and consolidating back office operations. We have underway already something we call the Campus Service Cooperative, which, as was referenced earlier, is our strategy to bring together the administrative functions that are not core to the work we do on our campuses into a virtual cloud management. We already have 20% of the system-wide payroll functioning through that cloud. We're working to bring HR in, we're working to bring financial aid in, and we'll keep marching through the functions as we go. Arguably, this started with the merger that the legislature adopted 15 years ago as an early form of this kind of strategy. We've optimized our span of control with a reduction from 45 to 31 presidents. We've gone from 8 data centers to 1 data center. We have 15,000 employees serving 420,000 students. And of those 15,000 employees, 500 are administrators, and the balance are line and service staff in the classroom and at the counter. We believe that the legislature also got good advice last year. We asked for a review by the legislative auditor of the system office. And this review came in last year and was presented to the legislature. There were 5 recommendations made in that review, and all those recommendations are now implemented and have been adopted by our board, by the chancellor, and by our system. We would argue that our organization is quite different from the executive branch agencies that are listed in the bill. We have a board appointed by the governor and confirmed by the Senate. Our educational and research functions are unlike anything else in the list of agencies that you saw. We have unique accounting and payroll platforms, and we are unique in our labor union relationships. So, Madam Chair and members, we would represent that we have great momentum going and would respectfully request that we be set aside from the action in this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and thanks for the good work you're doing. Did you want to comment on that at all, Representative Benson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, it was because of the work and the conversations that we have that I've decided to change it to a more permissive language. I've been impressed by the Chancellor's zeal to get at the efficiencies that he believes that he can bring to the operation. And I really believe that I'd like to give them that opportunity. Bring the resources. By the, you know, the way the bill will be written, it will just be an additional tool that they can address or use. It won't force them to go out and enter into a contract at all. They'll be able to pick companies like Bain, for example, if that's the one they choose or so choose, that has done work in this area for education, for higher education. It will simply give them that tool. Now, the report will come back in January, and we'll get some testimony about did the contracts or were the contracts are individuals identified to do the work. And then, of course, it will be up to the legislature to find out whether or not, indeed, the agencies in Minsky decided to take advantage of these things, and then go forth from there to decide if, there should be some shalls put into it. But I'd have to say that it's because of Minsky's efforts that it's went to from the shall to the permissive language that this will definitely be written in before it makes it to the next committee.
Thank you. Representative O'Driscoll?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just like to maybe build on what Representative Benson was talking about on here. I know firsthand from some of my experiences with one of the campuses that's in a district that's very near mine at St. Cloud State University. The president had me in here about a year or a year and a half ago when they were undergoing some of these kinds of things. And those were initiatives that they took on their own non-legislative requirements because they saw that they would need to do some efficiencies because they could see the trend of where things were going. All of that happened outside of the view of the legislature, and I think that giving Minsky the opportunity to be, if you will, rewarded for that type of self-initiation by changing the language is very important, and that maybe other agencies within the scope of what Representative Benson's bill is looking at would undertake some of those kinds of things as well. And trust me, I know that they have implemented some of these because I have constituents in my district who are affiliated with the university who were not always excited about what the university did, but again, that was at a local level, done autonomously through the president and the of the campus to try to build a more efficient system and, as we've talked about today, to get more bang for the taxpayer dollar. So I just thought I would add that as a point of consideration today as well.
Thank you. Any other questions? Is there anybody else that would like to testify to this bill today? Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And kind of building on what I said earlier, I mean, I pulled out the book here, the statute book, and like I said, the Sunset Commission mm-hmm. is doing a lot of this work already. And if you read the subdivision 6 or 7, excuse me, kind of continuation, the Sunset Commission is supposed to, following Sunset Review and Agency, the legislature may act within the same legislative session in which the Sunset Report is received. And by the Sunset Advisory Commission, and recommendations to continue or reorganize the agency. So again, we're already doing this. That's why I said this bill seems to me to be duplication of what we're already doing. So that's the first point I want to make here. The second thing is we're talking about assumptions, and there's an assumption that we talk about looking at private sector, and we're always here, and we should do things more like the private sector. There's an assumption there that we're not doing that in the government. I mean, as we just heard from Minsky, they're already doing this. Other agencies, as we looked at the Sunset Commission this last year, they're already doing this. They've actually looked at this and leaned down themselves so that they're actually models that we should be looking at, and maybe the private sector should be looking at, is how they can run more efficiently. I mean, I don't think we should be putting our nose into what private businesses do, but, you know, we're constantly being compared as we should be running this more like the businesses do, but in a lot of cases, we are doing that already. The other concern I have here, and it's something that Representative Benson said, that, and he's shown a willingness by the amendment here that he's willing to listen and tweak the bill as it goes forward. But as we push this bill forward out of committee, we've heard it on other bills in this committee and other committees about this is a work in progress. We're working on this. When then it comes to the floor and promises that we're going to be working with the interest groups to make it better so everybody can work together on this, and then we've gotten bills on the floor of the House that we passed where we've gotten promises from committee members, and I'm not saying Representative Benson is not doing that, because it shows that it looks like he has been very open to making changes to make it better, but we've heard these promises from other representatives, and the bills that we get on the floor are exactly how they were in committee, no changes to them. So I have some concern there as this moves forward. I hope that you're a man of your word and that you're going to continue working on this to try and tweak it and make it better, but again, back to my original point, is I think this is something we're already doing. We passed the Sunset Commission last year. We've just started doing it. We have a schedule that we're going to be looking at all these agencies with the idea of making them more efficient, trying to find out where we have duplications, try and eliminate those duplications and make government more efficient. I mean, that's a good goal that we should all be working for, is because the more efficient government is, the better services we're going to provide to our citizens of the state of Minnesota, and the more cost, or the less costs we're going to have in it, and so our tax rates are going to be lower because of it. But we're already doing some of this stuff, and so I see this as a duplication of what, again, the Sunset Commission was set up to do originally.
Thanks, well, Representative Nelson. I don't know that I view it the same way as you do. The Sunset Committee, the agencies and whatnot come forth and tell us what they are doing and their mission, and they have several other things. I think that the thing that they don't have is the tool that would be given here, where you'd have an independent study of the internal organization. And I view this as just another tool that could assist that, just as I view the OLA as a tool that can assist our process. So I guess I don't know that I feel like it's a redundant procedure. I think it's just a tool that we have, and frankly, I don't know that the inside of a organization or an agency is always necessarily the best determination of how the organization should be reorganized. So I guess I view this as a complement rather than a conflict. I don't know if you wanted to comment on it, Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Now, actually, I respectfully disagree that the statute as written for the Sunset Commission goes to the heart of what this bill is trying to do in terms of reorganizing the management structure. And I would want to make a comment, too, that in testimony it seems as though this bill is addressing also consolidating agencies, and it really doesn't speak to that. There was a Downey bill that does that. This is really about an internal agency reorganization of the management structure, for them to take a closer look at the efficiencies and effectiveness that can be brought at just looking at the entire management structure.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Benson. And again, like I said, we can agree to disagree on, like I said, with some of the discussions we had at the beginning of the Sunset Commission were around how we were going to do it and what we were going to do. And as Representative Pepp and I both would come to on the Sunset Commission came to is that they need a budget to perform some of this stuff, some more of this in-depth stuff, mm-hmm. To look at what they're doing and carry on that mission, as I think we all want it to do. But like I said, I'd view this, and again, it's a little bit, it's, we're again looking at hiring more consultants, spending money that, as Representative Scalzi said, that the state doesn't have right now to look at things, and it doesn't always find anything that's going to save us any money or taxpayer dollars. So, again, I don't see this bill as, because it's just a continuation of bills that we've been seeing here, that there's an assumption here that we're not already doing this. As was pointed out here, the different departments and agencies can already do this on their own, and some of them are doing it. There's an assumption that we're not doing this stuff, that we're totally inefficient. And in my work history of working both in the private and the public sector, I see the public sector being much more efficient at times than given credit for, and B, than what we actually, than the public sector, or excuse me, that the private sector is in a lot of cases. So that's all I need.
Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Benson, I like what you're trying to do with the bill. I just offer a little bit of additional information you might find useful. Some history, in the early 70s, Governor Anderson had a program called LEAP, the Loaned Executive Action Program, in which executives from Minnesota companies came to state government and offered their expertise for free. They were outsiders with good experience who had led organizational change, as was state-of-the-art in the early 70s. And they brought that expertise to the state, and they said, have it. We'd like our state to work better. This is part of our duty as citizens to help make the state work better. And a number of changes occurred, but one of the most significant was the creation of the Department of Finance, which we'd never had before. We had never had a dedicated finance department, which is now known as MMB. And I think actually the Personnel Department was first created then, which is the two functions that are now combined together into MMB. So I think this question of always looking at how are we organized is the our service outcomes being improved and so forth are really good questions to ask, but I guess the question I have is whether we can accomplish this without having to spend taxpayer dollars to get that expertise. It seems to me that IBM should be willing to do that for the state of Minnesota for free. And in fact, they should follow the lead of General Mills, which already does that to a substantial degree, offering their lean process improvement experts to the state to help make government services more efficient and effective. And you know, General Mills is in my district, and I think they're an outstanding company, and maybe IBM should look to their leadership and offer some of this, or other companies interested in this study should think about the possibility of doing it for free, because we have a good history of doing that, and I think most we're lucky to have civic-minded businesses in Minnesota, and I think we should take advantage of that. So I'd encourage you, as you're looking at your bill, to find a way to maybe encourage some more expertise to come to the state for free.
Thank you. Okay, any more questions from members? Okay, seeing no further questions, I will renew my motion that House File 1813 be recommended to pass as amended and be re-referred to the Committee on State Government Finance. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay.
No.
Motion does prevail. Thank you, Representative Benson. We'll move on to House File 2169, Representative Beard.
I was ready on that.
Hello, Representative Beard.
Madam Chair and members, it's Constituent Day at the Capitol, and there's a whole bunch of constituents here. And so everybody is running everywhere. Pardon me while my, I now dry off the top of the, give me about three of those, please. Madam Chair, I'd like to move House File 2169, recommended to pass and be re-referred to government, State Government Finance, I believe.
Yep.
Is that where we're going next?
So moved.
Thank you. And Madam Chair, to get the bill in the shape in which I'd like to present it, I have an amendment in the packet. I believe it is the A1. 636 is what mine says. Or what's the number on it? And I'll just move
A1.
It.
A1. Okay.
It's the A1 amendment. Madam Chair, I'll move the A1 amendment.
Okay. Representative Beard moves the A1 amendment. Looks like he's going to have to explain the bill fully before we completely understand the amendment.
Yes.
So is it okay if we go ahead and vote on the A1 amendment?
If you will. Madam Chair, I'd appreciate it if you would, and then I'll as we're explaining the bill, we'll talk about what we've called out and deleted in the A1 amendment.
Okay. All those in favor of the A1 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Amendment does prevail. Back to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, this... I imagine we're going to have to take this bill up again tomorrow because this is going to be committee work bill. This is a significant bill dealing with rules, regulations, and how the legislature interacts with them, I think in a good way as we talk about the bill. However, I recognize that there are others that may have some comments that can shed some light as we go forward, although I will submit that this bill has been in the process of being developed over the last 3 years and I think is a compilation of my experience sitting on this committee, when you chaired it, Madam Chair, when Representative Nelson chaired it, as we've talked about rules, regulations, and listened to the stories from the citizens who actually have to work under the scenario we've put together over the years. This bill also is not a bill that lays responsibility entirely on the agencies, and we just don't complain about the rules, but we also will carefully, as we talk about the bill, you'll see this, carefully make it clear that their authority only extends from this place and that the legislature is entirely culpable and responsible for the rulemaking process and for the rules that are put forth. That'll become a little more clear here in a moment. Madam Chair, I'm going to just briefly tell you how I've come to carry this bill and why I care about this process. As we've listened to, I think, as Representative Simon mentioned a few moments ago, a whole fleet of bills coming through dealing with rulemaking and how we govern ourselves. These are important things. And as the economy is beginning to recover, it's important and I think in a golden opportunity to look at how we govern ourselves. What's necessary, what might have been layered on over the years that needs to be revisited. This is an opportunity. House Bill 2169, I think, gets at something that I think that we would do well to seize the opportunity to revisit some of the things that have been done over the last several decades, actually. Let me tell you just a brief story. Having lunch here just before session started in January with a friend of mine who runs a very substantial contracting business in the Twin Cities, does a lot of work, private and public work, in the contracting arena. And I asked him, how was his private work coming along? Was he sensing an uptick in the economy, or how were things looking? And he said, yes, actually he had a sense that when it came to commercial and private construction, he was seeing things, they bottomed out. Last year he thought was the bottom. This year he was cautiously optimistic, except for one thing. He said in his 35 years of employing several hundred people, he has never seen an avalanche of rules and regulations like he is seeing now. He called it an avalanche of rules and regulations. Now, he was not speaking to us specifically as state legislators or pointing the finger necessarily at our agencies as much as I think he was looking over our shoulders at Washington and some things that are happening there with the goalposts that are moving, new rules being promulgated. But members, be very clear, those rules actually do come down and are administered through our agencies. And the intent of House File 2169 is to clearly delineate what's in existing statute that we are as responsible as the agencies are for knowing what we're voting on, knowing what we're authorizing, and knowing what we're, afflicting the citizenry with, but there's got to be a better word than afflicting, but what we're asking them to comply with, what we're making them come up with. Briefly, House File 2169, as it will be amended, has three sections, and I'm going to have my friend Lisa Frenette, who's been doing a yeoman's job at putting this together and helping it come together. She'll explain in detail as we march through it. But members, the first part of the bill does three things. The first part mentions that all the new rules are subject to review by the Legislative Coordinating Commission. With some tweaking to that, I think you'll find that the existing statutes do put the LCC in the loop. Rarely, though, have we exercised that authority. So this just kind of delineates and makes clear again that all new rules that are coming from the agencies are subject to review by the Legislative Coordinating Commission and clearly spells out how the legislators and legislature can intervene if they think it's necessary in the process for the rule to go forward if a rule is challenged. The second part of the bill refers to our friends at the Sunset Advisory Commission, a commission assembled by this body here within the last few years. In the course of reviewing the scope and necessity of each agency, which is their charge, this adds a component that says that while they're doing that, they'll ask those agencies to bring forth their rules and regulations so that while the Sunset Advisory Commission is reviewing the scope and the necessity of the agency and what their work is, they will be reviewing the rules at the same time. I would have assumed that this would have already been implied in their charter and in why the agencies exist, but House File 2169 just makes it a little more explicit, spells it out a little more clearly, and that's what that second part of the bill is. The third part is probably the one that's going to generate some the most of the discussion. That advances sunset dates that are already in statute numbers. The agencies listed in section, I think it's on page 10 of the bill, already have a sunset date of 2020. All their rules expire in 2020. The legislature passed that legislation already. This proposes to move that up to 2013 and to make it clear that all rules will be represented and that they will have their, there's an acronym we're going to use called SONAR in order to save a whole lot of talking, the statement of necessity and reasonableness. Every rule that's promulgated in the state has to have a statement of necessity and reasonableness, henceforth called SONAR. If they've already complied with that, and I think almost all of them have, this shouldn't be as onerous as it appears at first glance, that they bring their sonar statements, talk about why the rules exist, and so on and so forth, and they can be repromulgated. But my fond hope here is in this third part of the bill is what it's going to uncover is duplicative effort. Where we have, for instance, three agencies dealing with stormwater, I think as the Sunset Commission and the Legislative Coordinating Commission are looking at the rules, it will become very clear that most of the rules do the same thing from three different perspectives. This, Madam Chair and members, I think is our golden opportunity to actually have an honest discussion if the air can't be just as clean and the water just as pure by making them comply with one set of regulations from one agency versus three sets of regulations from three agencies, which accomplish the same thing just over and over again. Madam Chair, with that, I've got some other comments maybe I'll save for the question and answer time, but I'd like to introduce the first testifier on the bill, Lisa Frenette, to maybe speak a little more succinctly. Madam Chair, procedurally, though, we moved the A1 amendment. Did we vote on the A1 amendment?
We did.
We did. I was at I. I remember this now. Okay. With that, Madam Chair, there is a small author's amendment, but in the next committee, I will make that. We were just going to strike revisor statutes as somebody reported to. I will make sure that happens in the next committee. So the bill is in fine shape to discuss as it stands at the moment.
Before Ms. Frenette addresses us, Representative Erdahl did have a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Beard, just really a quick comment. I commend Representative Beard for bringing this forward, another fine piece of Beard legislation. It addresses a concern that I have. I think I might have told a story about a constituent and rules. And did I tell? Yeah, I did. It addresses that. I think that we track these rules. I think it's very important. And I do have another piece of legislation coming forward that does a historical tracking and then moving into the future. So commend Ms. Representative Beard for this piece of legislation.
Thank you.
Representative Nelson.
I have heard every testimony. I just wanted to give a name on the list.
Okay. Ms. Frenette, you may proceed. Don't forget to identify yourself.
Before Ms. Frenette does, would it be helpful to have Mr. Shepard step through the amendments and the bill to say what it is we struck, and then we could speak to why? Would that be helpful, or would it be more helpful to hear from Ms. Frenette first?
That's up to you. If you'd like that, we can have Mr. Shepard do that.
I'd actually like Mr. Shepard to explain the amendment and what we did. It's largely technical and changed a few dates, but I think it would be helpful. And I'll speak to the two deletions if necessary.
Mr. Shepard?
Madam Chair and members, the first thing that the amendment that the committee adopted does is to delete the concept of substantial impact in a few places in the bill. You'll see it on page 1, line 19, where a legislative committee or the LCC can object to a rule based on the fact that it has a substantial impact. That was deleted on page 3, line 16, the same thing. The Sunset Commission would not be evaluating whether a rule has a substantial impact. Page 4, line 25 and 26 is the same issue, again, with respect to substantial impact and the Sunset Commission. At the bottom of page 5, section 5 is deleted. That's the definition of substantial impact. On page 6, section 7, it's a different issue. This is deleting the section that would have forbidden agencies from seeking to implement non-binding interpretive statements. That's deleted from the bill. The next deletion from the bill is on page 8, lines 9 and 10. This has to do with the statement of need and reasonableness that Representative Beard referenced earlier, and it is deleting a clause relating to substantial economic impact. Also on page 8, line 10, or page 8, section 10 is deleted. This is because it contained a cross-reference to a section which under the original bill was repealed but will no longer be repealed. That's on page 10, section 14, the repealer is deleted from the bill. On page 10, line 4, there's a date change for the report that must be submitted to the governor and the LCC. Madam Chair, that's a summary of the amendment.
And Madam Chair, I'd like to just mention that the portion on non-binding policies, guidelines, and rules, we wanted to make sure that the rules were actually, they're being promulgated, actually had the force of law. In working with the agencies, it became clear from revenue, the Department of Revenue in particular, that they issue non-binding interpretive statements all the time. And so rather than stand in the way of their good work, we thought, you know what, let's just jettison this portion of the bill and make it so that it doesn't impede what they actually try to do over there. So that's the amendment. You've already voted on it, but that explains the substantive changes to the bill that the amendment did. With that, I'm ready to have a testifier talk about the bill, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Burnett. You can just identify yourself.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Lisa Burnett. I'm with Burnett Legislative Advisors, and I'm working with Representative Beard on this bill this session. Real briefly, Representative Beard did a great job moving through the different sections of the bill. I'll just highlight a couple things. Again, Section 1 gives the LCC the authority to review the proposed rules. Sections 2, 3, and 4 of the bill grant some additional authority to the newly established Sunset Advisory Commission, specifically asking the commission to review the rules, report their findings, and make recommendations to the legislature as to what should happen with the rules. Section 5 has been deleted. Section 6 strengthens the current legislative criteria of the agencies for their general authority to adopt rules. Section 7 has been deleted. Section 8 and 11, 8, 11, and 12 currently make consistent noticing, make the statutes consistent in noticing various people and interested parties along with the members of each of the committees that have jurisdiction over a bill and the Legislative Coordinating Commission. Section 9 requires an additional sonar requirement, asking them to assess the cumulative impact of the rules in coordination with federal and local regulations currently in place. And Section 13 moves the review date for the Sunset Advisory Commission for the agencies of 2020, particularly the Environmental MPCA, DNR, Department of Agriculture, Board of Water and Soil Resources, up from 2020 to 2013. And then I'd like to clarify one quick thing on the guidelines part. Several of the agencies go through guidelines to help people understand stuff, and that's why we removed it.
Madam Chair, that's our testimony. I believe that someone from the Minnesota Chamber wanted to speak in favor of the bill, and I think that's the testifiers that I've identified. That I want to speak with me in favor of the bill at this moment.
Great, thanks. Welcome to the committee. And if you just want to identify yourself for the tape.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tony Quillis. I'm the Director of Environmental Policy at the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. And just very briefly, because I know time is short, just wanted to let you know that we support Senator Representative Beard's, I apologize, proposal regarding regulatory reform, and hope to follow through in seeing that using an existing process to review the proposed rules, but also more importantly to establish a process to review and identify obsolete and duplicative rules. And Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, I just wanted to let you know that we're supportive of that, and we think it's a good way using an existing process that's already in statute to go through and just review some of the things that might be obsolete or duplicative over the years.
Thank you.
Good. Thanks.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Beard, you're moving up the review of this group from 2020 to 2013. Mm-hmm. Is it your intention to have this on top of what's already being reviewed in 2013? Or are we going to readjust some of those? Because this looks like a large workload for the Sunset Commission. And I guess the second question I would ask is, do you envision giving the Sunset Commission a budget and some staff to do this? Because this is adding on to their workload, and right now we're doing it with current staff that piling on work that they're already doing and piling on work on the Legislative Auditing Commission or the Legislative Commission to Coordinating Commission to, or we're putting extra work on them already. So Is your intention to readjust the schedule so those other ones that are supposed to be viewed this upcoming year get dropped down into later years? And
Representative Beard.
Madam Chair, Representative Nelson, thank you for that. Good question, because the last portion of the bill is, at first glance, looks the scariest and the most onerous, and I assure you, in my opinion, it is not. So I answer your last question first. Yes, as we're doing committee work and as testimony is taken, if it becomes apparent that we need to adjust that date, I'm certainly willing to adjust that date. Waiting 8 years seemed to be unnecessarily long, but Madam Chair, the Sunset Advisory Commission, their work going forward, if the agencies are coming, and these agencies in particular are bringing their sonars and their rules, my hunch is that there will be a tendency to approve them en masse after they've been reviewed for where there could be possibly overlap and duplication of effort. To speak more precisely to the first part of his question, Madam Chair, I would like to deflect it to Ms. Burnett, if I may. If that would be helpful.
Ms. Burnett?
Madam Chair, members, Representative Nelson, there's a couple things that are happening right now which encouraged us to move this forward. First of all, last year there was a similar moratoria bill that's going through right now, the process that also went through the process. In the end, what happened was the Pollution Control Agency and the University of Minnesota were appropriated funds to look at water quality rules, and they're supposed to report back to the legislature on the various water quality rules on January 15th, 2013. We also have the governor's executive order that was put out last fall that is asking for all the agencies to get together to talk about the various environmental rules that affect businesses, and they're supposed to report to the governor on this by November 15th, 2012. And then the governor has recently put together a proposal where he'd like all the agencies to work towards a united goal promoting business in his Minnesota Business First Stop with the Department of Employment and Economic Development. I said that right, thank you. And so we felt that this was a good way to, if we were going to have these reports coming forward and they were talking about all the environmental rules, why not bring the sunset date forward to the LCC so that it could all be looked at together and give what you guys have the legislative authority to do and take a last look at rules as they move forward and with what's happening.
So actually we saw it, Madam Chair, as dovetailing with the work that's already happening in November, December. To just have them be ready to go again in January with the sunset rules in front of the Sunset Commission and the LCC. Thanks.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Beard and Ms. Burnett. That's all well and good, and I understand that, but that sounds like a lot of work, and these are big agencies that we're going to move their sunset date up, because currently in Group 2, we're going to be looking at a couple of small agencies, the Department of Health and Human Services, the Board of Education, the Department of Education, and that's why I say piling these on top of those, that's why I'm saying if we're going to be, as this move forward, we should possibly look at adjusting the schedule so that, because that's, you know, we have a lot of large agencies that we're going to be looking at on top of the PCU and or the PCA and the Department of Natural Resources and the other ones that are listed, five of them in the current bill. That's an awful lot. It's like doubling up, again, with very limited staff for the Sunset Commission, no budget to do investigation and look at the stuff on their own. And that's why I raised the question of it. It's not that opposing this. I'm one of the co-authors of the bill. I believe this is a more reasoned approach at looking at rule reform or regulation reform, but to dump that on top of these other small agencies might be more work than the Sunset Commission can handle in the next year.
Senator Beard?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And yes, as I mentioned in my opening remarks, this is committee work. This is good committee work, Representative Nelson. As it moves forward, one of the things that will be happening is we'll be having more meetings up in my office and talking about the Sunset Commission schedule. And if this is quickly apparent, I'm sure it will be, we can adjust this timing so that at the end of the day they're doing good work, not just hurried up work. We want it to be good work, and that may take some dwell time. Thanks.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Ms. Burnett, I didn't catch at the beginning which organization or group you're representing. I don't know if you said that or I just didn't remember it. Can you clarify for me what that is?
Ms. Burnett?
Madam Chair, Representative Hornstein, this is purely out of the goodness of my heart. Again, I've been working on something similar to this the past 3 years. I started out a couple years ago with the moratoria bill and a rural review bill. Some nice things happened last year in special session that gives the PCA again and the University of Minnesota the opportunity to look at their water quality rules. Talked with Representative Beard, who carried the bill last session, and he asked it about kind of what happened and what could be done next, and he asked if I would continue to work on this with him.
Okay, so as a private citizen, you're not representing any group or interest?
No, sir, I'm not representing your group.
Okay, well, thanks, because I didn't catch that. You had mentioned one of my concerns I guess it's Section 13. You had mentioned that you would like the legislature to take a last look. I think that's how you put it. And that's in this section, correct? That legislative authority piece?
Ms. Burnett?
Madam Chair, Representative Hornstein, yes. Current statutes allow for the legislature to take a last look at rules.
Okay. So are you... thank you, Madam Chair. So is this... This sounds somewhat reminiscent of a bill we heard earlier this session around the legislature being a little bit more involved with rulemaking. I think that you have, you know, one of the in subdivision two, you want basically the legislature would have to act if these rules wouldn't automatically sunset. Is that, am I reading that correctly?
Ms. Burnett?
Madam Chair, Representative Hornstein, if I'm correct, you're saying that all the rules would sunset if the legislature did not act. And no, Section 2, if I'm answering your question correctly, Section 2 says that as the Sunset Advisory Commission looks at the various agencies, they're asking to bring their rules forward to talk about those also. Part of the criteria set out in the Sunset Advisory Committee's review process. And then the agencies, if you're asking about Section 13, or are you just staying on Section 2, sir?
Well, in Subdivision 2, it says these rules would sunset unless a new law is enacted after the effective date of this section.
Yes.
My apologies, sir. I went back to Section 2.
I'm sorry. I said Subdivision 2. I'm sorry about that. Yeah.
Yes, sir. They would sunset. They would be repealed, but they would only be repealed if you go up to lines 10-11 through 10-13, in the submissions of report to the agency of the agencies that they submit, they either propose a timetable for the repeal of the rule, or they propose they bring forward a bill that says they want to have them reauthorized. And I can't imagine the bill would be anything longer than chapter 2020 will be reauthorized, and it's just it kind of goes line by line with why they believe that they should be reauthorized.
Quick follow-up then. Thank you. So, that makes me, that's of concern, because then you're really bringing the legislature, as we had discussed in committee a couple weeks ago, really back into the rulemaking game. I mean, do you really want me looking at Section 6232 about big game? And I know Representative Scalzi is very smart, but, Chapter 6259 about crayfish. I mean, this just opens up all kinds of things, and were we going to be here in the legislature at midnight on fishing opener debating, how many walleye people can take from Mille Lacs? And, I just have a fundamental concern about where this, the slippery slope, where this leads us in terms of the legislature, really getting into the nitty-gritty of rulemaking. If there's a cryptosporidium outbreak, does the governor call a special session so we can rewrite rules about surface water and wastewater treatment facilities? So that's it's sort of where this could potentially end up that's of concern to me. And I know Representative Beard well enough to know that he probably will have a response and maybe reassure me about this. But I think we're really in a very, very dangerous place when we have legislators taking last looks and potentially rewriting chapters of rules. So,
Representative Beard, you can answer that briefly, but what I would like to do, and I do have one more member question, I would like to give, if there's someone in the audience who is here, especially for this bill today, that can't make it, my intention is to lay this bill over to Thursday because we have a lighter
agenda on Thursday. So we will not take this bill up tomorrow. We will take it up on Thursday. So, Representative Beard, I'll let you ask. The only member question I have is Representative Scalzi, and then I'll take some brief testimony only for those who can't make it back here on Thursday for some reason. Representative Beard, to you.
Madam Chair, Representative Hornstein asked good logical questions about the emergency rulemaking and the special rulemaking, and I believe as we go forward you'll find that that's included in the bill or not monkeyed with, those processes that already exist. But we'll talk more about that as we move forward. I'm writing down these questions so we come back on Thursday and can actually breathe while we're talking about the bill. We'll be talking about those things.
Representative Scalzi?
Thank you, Ms. Chair, and I think that's a good idea. I think my question is, how many rules do we have? I don't know. I'm not asking a question to which I know the answer. Is it 100? Is it 2,000? Is it a million? I have no idea how many rules are in the state of Minnesota and how many rules are in each department of the state of Minnesota. To me, that's crucial to know when we discuss this bill. So maybe you can add that to your list, Representative Beard.
Will do.
Thank you.
Thank you. I do have a person here who I've been informed can't be here on Thursday, Sydney Jordan. Oh, thank you. Welcome to the committee. If you could just identify yourself for the tape as you begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Sydney Jordan, and I am a junior at the University of Minnesota and a member of the Minnesota Public Interest Research Group, or MPIRG, which is a statewide student-directed nonprofit. I am here today to voice opposition to House File 2169. Minnesota has a strong and an impressive legacy of taking care of our natural resources, and the rules we have in place safeguard the food we eat, ensure that we continue to have great trails and parks across the state, and guarantee that we have clean air and water. Part of what attracted me to Minnesota as a student is its steadfast commitment to the land and the well-being of its citizens. One of the ways that we do this is through our state agencies. Hardworking state employees and dedicated legislatures create rules through these agencies that protect Minnesotans and the land that we all love. Undoubtedly, there are areas of our rules and statutes that can be examined and improved upon, but that does not mean sunsetting everything and starting over. By working within what already exists, it is easy to improve rather than starting from scratch. Every session, the legislature adds to and deletes parts of our laws. Improving and updating previous legislature's work so that we have a well-functioning government is an important job. MPIRG believes that the people running our state agencies, whose job it is to create and enforce these rules, are also very important. To sunset the rule does not allow them to do their important work for the people of Minnesota. MPIRG believes that a government's job is to protect the health and safety of all of its people. This bill puts a higher value on corporate special interests than to our public health. We know that our public health is inextricably tied to the environment. And when our air is clean, we breathe easier, and we have healthy lakes for fishing and swimming, our quality of life increases. So by supporting our farmers, we also support the land and the community. Departments to protect Minnesota's natural resources were created for a reason. They were created because citizens and legislatures saw a need that was not being met to protect our environment. Given the current political climate, there's no guarantee that many of these important rules will be passed into law. To sunset these agencies' rules would be hugely backwards, not an innovation of any kind. This kind of action does not benefit the people of Minnesota, and I urge you to reject House File 2169.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who cannot testify on Thursday that would like a minute now to testify? We'll have an opportunity on Thursday as well. Okay, seeing no other witnesses that need to testify today, I will lay over House File 2169 until Thursday. That meeting adjourned.